Blog Talk Radio.
Once again, welcome back to another special edition of the Four Scenes Fire Internet Soccer Show, Internet Podcast Show, Soccer Podcast Show, discussing what's going on currently in CONCACAF World Cup qualifying, as well as reviewing USA versus Belgium that was held at the National Stadium in Brussels this afternoon. Question was, were you able to make sure you caught it on time? Because as everyone read, it was supposed to be on ESPN, but unfortunately, it was on ESPN2. Well, even when I looked at my cable guide, it said ESPN 2:30 to 5 o'clock, USA versus Belgium. But because the U.S. Tennis Open was washed out because of the big heavy rains here in the New York City tri-state area, they apparently decided to move the game to ESPN2 without anyone knowing, and if you did know about it, good for you. But for those of us that had to take care of something, it was something called a DVR that I set to record, and apparently I've lost most of the first half. So let me say to ESPN, why in the hell didn't you tell us that, well, you decided to change the channel for where the game was on? Other than that, nothing happened in the first half, as I understood. I was able to catch halftime information about what happened. Basically, it was Tim Howard that did very well. They had a good opening 20, 25 minutes or so, and then everything went to hell again. But you know what? Once again, we are seeing Jurgen Klinsmann experimenting with certain players he's already feeling comfortable with, other players that he's trying out. Obviously, you have to see what's going to happen with the U.S. men's national team and what they are going to do for these World Cup qualifiers coming in June of 2012. So we are going to discuss more about the U.S. men's national team in the second half of the show. But right away, let's discuss about the tragic news that we heard today. It's been all over Twitter. It's been all over Facebook. It's also been on ESPN. It's been all over the place, Fox Soccer as well, especially what's happened down in the Dallas area. Bobby Ryan, a member of the original Dallas Burn days, of course, becoming FC Dallas, retired to become part of the front office, then becoming a member of the broadcast team with Steve Jolly. And it's just a very, very sad moment when one of these players that has been with one particular team throughout his entire career, in Bobby Ryan, did not know the man, obviously. I did met him once, and that was this year when FC Dallas came to play the Red Bulls at Red Bull Arena. That was the time where I saw the gentleman. I said hello to him. I'm basically, you know, Steve Jolly used to play for the Metro Stars / Red Bulls, and it was very great. It was really, really a great time to see Steve Jolly. He's a good man. He's fantastic to talk to. You're glad that everything, you know, you're happy about what's going on. And all I can say is that it is really, really, really a tough thing to see when someone like Bobby Ryan, 35 years old, dies of a heart attack. And it's such a shame that such a good person has left this earth very, very early, very, very quickly. And, you know, you just feel bad for his wife. You feel bad for his kids. You feel bad for his parents, who I don't know if they're still alive or not, obviously, but you just feel bad for everyone down in the Dallas area, Dallas-Fort Worth area, what's happened to such a good man. I've heard so many good things about Bobby Rhine. He's got a good sense of humor, I understand. And it's just such a tragedy to see someone that young die the way he did. And if you've been reading the information, what's going on recently in the sports world, obviously, a couple of players from the National Hockey League, of course, Derek Brugard, original member of the Minnesota Wild, as well, played last year for the New York Rangers. Ryan Rippon took his own life. He was a member of the Vancouver Canucks, and then he was basically left unprotected, or he was traded to the brand-new team called the Winnipeg Jets. He committed suicide, and, of course, Wade Belak, member of the Toronto Maple Leafs, has played on several different NHL teams. Apparently, his death was an accident. But still, though, it's very, very sad, and it's very, very disheartening to see good people ending up no more when it comes to something like this. But one thing is for sure, and that is, it is still a tragedy, and I pray really hard that the family will be okay. Just to let everyone know, donations are right now are available to the FC Dallas Foundation. Of course, you go to fcdallas.com/form/donations. Or just go to fcdallas.com. There should be a link there as well. If you would like to donate to the Bobby Rhine family, please go ahead and head over to fcdallas.com. It says the FC Dallas Foundation is now accepting donations in memory of Bobby Rhine, former FC Dallas player and broadcaster. The FC Dallas Foundation is a 501 (C)(3) nonprofit organization. Your contribution is deductible to the extent provided for by applicable law. Checks may be mailed to the FC Dallas Foundation at 9200 World Cup Way, number 202, Frisco, Texas, 75034. You may also make an online donation by filling out the form. All fields marked with an asterisk are required. So, ladies and gentlemen, if you wish to send your checks as well as online information for what's happened to Bobby Rhine, and of course, sad note about for his family now, not having him there anymore. Please, if you're able to, please send donations to the FC Dallas Foundation. Once again, if you'd like to mail it, in the regular mail, 9200 World Cup Way, number 202, Frisco, Texas, 75034. There is an online form for contact, putting in your contact information, your billing information, and hopefully, everything will be okay with the Bobby Rhine family. And once again, I'd like to send my condolences. Such a sad thing, what's happened, and hopefully everything will be going very well. And, once again, it's just such a tragedy of what's happened with Bobby Rhine. And obviously we hope no one else will go through something like that. And hopefully with Bob, everyone will remember him. I remember him being a hard-nosed player when he played in MLS. I remember him, once again, doing anything and everything for Dallas. Whenever I saw him play against the Metros or the Red Bulls, or when you saw the Dallas Burn or FC Dallas on ESPN or Fox Soccer Channel, you hope the family will be okay. Once again, I'd like to send my condolences to the Rhine family. Hope they will be okay during this tragedy that's happened to Bobby Rhine. And once again, I'm very sorry for their loss. As we are ready to go here on the show, of course, once again, this is the second day of two World Cup qualifying for CONCACAF, and we've got some interesting scores going on right now at the moment. Curaçao and Haiti are in the sixth minute. It's scoreless. Puerto Rico and Canada are about to start up. Guyana and Bermuda will be starting up. Of course, it's already after 8 o'clock East Coast time, so they should be on their way. Let's quickly take a look at the lineups for Canada, and this is going to be very interesting to see how this will be done. Let's go right away. Puerto Rico is home. It's at Juan Román Lubrial Stadium. Goalkeepers Eric Reyes and, of course, Scott Jones, Richard Martinez, Noah Delgado, Alexis Rivera, Christian Arrieta, Christopher Feigenbaum, John Kraus, Andres Perez, Scott Horta, and Andres Cabrero. For Canada, Lars Hirschfeld will be in goal for the Maple Leafs, Mike Klukowski, Kevin McKenna, Andre Hainault, Julian De Guzman, Ian Hume, Will Johnson, Josh Simpson, the hero, with two goals against St. Lucia, Dwayne De Rosario, the penalty kick goal, the game-winning goal, David Edgar, and Terry Dunfeld, and, of course, the coaches for Costa Rica, Justin Campos, and, of course, for Canada, Stephen Hart, the referees, the officials from Suriname. The head official is Enrico Wingard. Assistant referee number one is Ramon Louisville. And from Aruba, assistant referee number two is Egbert Peche. And the fourth official is Rudolph Angela, or Angela, depending on how you pronounce it. But there you go. There's Canada's lineup. They should be starting soon. Unfortunately, no TV coverage here in the U.S. It was pretty good to see Canada taking on St. Lucia on Gold TV. I thought it was pretty awesome. And, of course, I'm keeping track of everything that's going on in World Cup qualifying and seeing how things are going. And, of course, as we are discussing here, it's going to be very interesting and very, very, very curious to know who is going to be in first place in the six round two groups. Of course, it looks like at the moment, as I have the groups in front of me, very interesting right now with Antigua and Barbuda, even though they're ahead with 6 points. The differential at the moment is at 10, so that would be 4 ahead of Haiti, depending on what they do against Curaçao. And, of course, that match is going to be starting off very, very soon. I'm sorry, excuse me, it is already on its way. Curaçao and Haiti are scoreless at the 8th minute right now, as it's already early. Puerto Rico hosting Canada, once again Guyana hosting Bermuda. But some interesting scores so far with matches that have already been played. St. Kitts and Nevis defeating St. Lucia 4-2. St. Lucia getting their goals late, but unfortunately just not enough time to make a comeback here. Barbados losing to Trinidad and Tobago 2-0. Belize at the moment lost to Guatemala by a score of 2-1 at home. Belize 1, Guatemala 2. And like I said before, Antigua and Barbuda destroying the U.S. Virgin Islands 8-1. Dominican Republic and Suriname 1-1 draw. And that's about it. The rest of the scores are from Friday night. So at the moment, we've got one match already underway. We got two matches coming up. And I believe it should have been starting already. And, of course, if you'd like to see some stream of it, I can recommend to you LiveSoccerTV.com. They have an FLV player available. So if you wish to check out what's going on in Canada, if you're not from, obviously, if you can't catch it any on a live satellite feed, go to LiveSoccerTV.com. They have a list of what's being shown and where you can get it. So it should be interesting what's going down in Puerto Rico, once again, as they're hosting Canada for basically who's going to be leading the group. Canada with 3 points in Group D, as once again they defeated St. Lucia 4-1. St. Kitts and Nevis in Puerto Rico had a scoreless draw. Puerto Rico and Canada are right now fighting for first place. So at the moment, it looks to be interesting. It looks to be exciting. So we will see what will happen as we move ahead and move on from these groups. But of course, there's still plenty to go, plenty to discuss as we move on. And we're going to talk about what's happening within CONCACAF World Cup qualifying. My guest coming on, hopefully very soon, will be once again Michael Lewis. I did talk to him yet today. He will be coming on the show very soon. And waiting for him to give a call. If not, we'll just have to give him a call and get some information out of him if we can. But everything should be okay, I believe. We'll get him on very soon. Just waiting for him to give us a call and to discuss what's been going on in CONCACAF. And once again, you just have to say that it looks to be pretty interesting. They're underway already in Puerto Rico, scoreless at the moment, 0-0 in the second minute, as Canada and Puerto Rico have just gotten underway. And all we can do here is just find out what the heck is going on as we check in here and there for other scores going on. Anyone in Major League Soccer currently has not scored for their national teams in Central America, Caribbean. But hopefully we will get all that information going on as we also discuss about the U.S. men's national team taking on Belgium, as we need to make sure what is going on and with CONCACAF and everything else involved. So as we keep on going here, what is basically finding out who's going to play the USA and Jamaica? Well, once again, as we all know, the qualifying groups, and we'll get to those qualifying groups in a minute, joining us right now from his illustrious office. It's very big, spacious. It's got tons of great autographed pictures. The one and only, the man who runs Big Apple Soccer and Tropigol, Mr. Michael Lewis. How are you, Michael?
Hey, Daniel. How are you? Unfortunately, I am not in my office. I am in my car right now. So I am just pulled over off the rainy Tuesday night here in New York.
Very, very true, and it's getting worse and worse and worse, unfortunately. Michael, ever since you've opened up your second website based on the Confederation of CONCACAF, of course, that's Tropigol at www.tropigol.com, how successful has it been?
It's been a slow growth right now. I think like everyone else, we want to see things happen immediately, but we're starting to get some traction. When you open a website, things don't happen overnight. With Big Apple, the same thing happened as well, too. I think you have to be found out about and have people come back again and again and tell other people, too, whatever story they read or whatever they like there. And there's definitely room for growth and room for improvement. We haven't seen the true potential of Tropigol yet. And by the way, you get an A for pronouncing it correctly, Tropigol. Thank you.
You're welcome. When I see you Saturday at Red Bull Arena, I'll bring you over some apples, Professor.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Let's get into it right away. Obviously, I think we had some great action on Friday as we saw some interesting score lines, especially. Were you able to watch the Canadian qualifier on Gold TV on Friday?
No, unfortunately, I was not able to. I was at my wife's high school reunion that night. So, I know that they won handily 4-1, if memory serves me correctly, or is it 4-0?
Yep.
I don't have my computer in front of me, so okay. And Dwayne De Rosario got his obligatory penalty kick in that match. And
yep.
But I know that they given their results, their frustrating results in the CONCACAF Gold Cup, where they were eliminated on an 11th-hour goal by Panama at the in their final group stage match. I think Canada, just for its psyche, needed a big win, just to know that it can play, or can score. Granted, the opposition isn't the greatest in the world, but you need that confidence in yourself.
Very, very true. Just to be fair here for Canada, it should have been more than 4 goals because they got a great, decent ball from Josh Simpson, who made it 1-0 in the 6th minute, but then all of a sudden the 7th, they gave one away to St. Lucia on a great bending ball. Hirschfeld was screened not just by a St. Lucian, but two of his own defenders. And it went in, and they just kept on pressing and pressing. And then it took them to halftime to calm down. And they were lucky enough unlucky enough to end up 1-1 at the half. And then they finally just put the whip out and just started putting in the goals.
I think a lot of teams will start out, quote-unquote, slow. I think the minnows, such as St. Lucia, might play hard for the first, 15 minutes, half hour, even for the half, and play them even. But the big difference between an amateur side from St. Lucia and a professional team from Canada is immense. Canada, these players are with club teams, whether it's in MLS, maybe the North American Soccer League, or in Europe, and they're in incredible shape. And I think when push comes to shove, I think if the fitness of a team like Canada will push the team, will separate the men from the boys in World Cup qualifying eventually. And I think if it's tied at the half or close to the half, I will not be surprised if the bigger team, the non-minnows, whatever you want to call them, will pull away in the second half. Saying that, there is always room for upsets. And, maybe there will be one tonight. I wish I could say I know some of the scores already. I don't. I know that some games were played this afternoon. But my gut feeling is there's always one surprise result, no matter what the confederation is.
Very, very true. Just to let you know, Michael, Guatemala did defeat Belize 2-1 today. So they're probably permanently in first place in Group E. And, of course, that's one of the two groups that the USA and Jamaica will be waiting for the winners for June 2012 to see who's going to be in their semifinal group. Let me ask you, why was it that the Bahamas decided to pull out of qualifying after having such a fantastic goal aggregate round before the draw was commencing?
Their field had not been completed, according to the information that I heard, and I don't think they had the proper lighting, if I'm not mistaken, and it didn't it wasn't up to FIFA standards for World Cup or international matches, and that's too bad because when a team is doing well, you don't want to see them drop out because of something that's not happening on the pitch. You want to see them get eliminated because they lost to a better team. And that's too bad. It makes for a very, very strange group because you're only going to have one game and two teams playing on a particular date and everyone gets awarded a forfeit. But it happens. In CONCACAF, things like this happen. I think you're going to see less and less of it, not having the proper stadiums, although Montserrat had to play its home game in the preliminary series in Trinidad because it did not have a regulation FIFA field. And I've been to Montserrat, and they do have a new field there, but it doesn't have – it's not a stadium. It's a field. It's literally a field. And like I said, this is going to happen with countries, minnow, the small countries in CONCACAF, like it or not.
Yeah, very true. Well, hopefully one day after this whole Jack Warner, now I guess we can add Chuck Blazer to the mix, ordeal is done. Hopefully maybe CONCACAF can be a little more sympathetic and maybe give their own members like Montserrat a helping hand and maybe creating a stadium around that fantastic field.
Well, Montserrat did get money from the Gold Project, and that they used that money to build a field, and I had seen the progress of it, and not that I was down there all the time, but it cost money to build a road to the stadium, to put in real, this was real grass, and to have some basic amenities there, and it does cost money. Now, I don't know how much it costs, but it was a start. And when I was there, back in 2004, Montserrat played Bermuda in a World Cup qualifying match, and basically they roped off people from the field. They had no stands, and I felt like I was at an amateur or semi-pro game in New York or New Jersey all over again. Saying that, the fans were well-behaved. There were no pitch invasions and nothing near it. I found a chair, and I sat about 15 feet away from the Montserrat bench and watched the game. I don't think you would see that for a U.S. or Canada match or some of the big Central American teams when they play their home games at CONCACAF qualifying, but I had a unique perspective there. So that's the situation in Montserrat. I'm not saying it was the same in Bahamas. I believe, if I'm not mistaken again, that Bahamas does have an actual stadium, but I don't think it was completed, and I don't think the lighting was there. And if someone wants to correct me, feel free to. Like I said, I don't have my computer on in front of me. We have a story about it on the Tropical website, but it's in archives right now.
That's fine. Of course, once again, if you like to keep up with everything going on in the Confederation of CONCACAF, tropigol.com, TROPIGOL.com. Let's move on to the U.S. men's national team here, Michael. It's been three matches already. It's draw against Mexico at Philadelphia, a one-goal loss to Costa Rica at the Home Depot Center, and this afternoon, if you were able to watch, a one-goal loss to Belgium on the road in Brussels. Many people are already feeling that they have to panic. What have you seen that makes you say, do we have the right to panic, or we should just calm down?
Well, first of all, I did not see the game, so I only read some reports about it. I hope to be home later and to watch it. So I can't tell you how they played. I was going to joke and say, hey, well, why don't we fire Klinsmann? But and I guess some people are panicking. I think it's way too early to panic. Don't get me wrong. I think we should be concerned. But, you know, you're talking about Belgium, which is a middle-of-the-road European team. We go on the road. U.S. does not travel well, does not play well in Europe. I think Klinsmann, more than anything else, is just, you know, checking things out with this team to see who can do what. And, am I concerned? Yes, definitely. Panic? No. World Cup qualifying for the U.S. doesn't begin until next year. And just from the games that, you know, we keep hearing about, Honduras in Miami, Ecuador, very possibly somewhere in the United States, or maybe in Connecticut, although that might not be true. I think he wants to see as many players and in different situations as he can before he gets serious. The year after a World Cup, I'm not saying it's the most boring year in international soccer, but at least when you don't have a European championship, yes, there's a CONCACAF Gold Cup, but basically teams are rebuilding and reloading for the next World Cup. And when I mean teams, I'm talking about Mexico. Mexico's in a different orbit, but yes, Mexico, Honduras, Costa Rica, Jamaica. You know, these teams that are at the higher levels of CONCACAF, yes, the results, non-wins, losses, ties, whatever you want to call them, it can be distressing to their supporters. But to me, the real matches are in qualifying. And, of course, in the Gold Cup, too. I mean, you know, in their own Confederations Cup. The CONCACAF Confederation Cup. I don't mean the FIFA Confederation Cup. So I'm not ready to jump out of any windows, not yet.
No, me neither. I think the panic right now that's coming out of most U.S. supporters is too early. There's no reason to panic right now. Let Klinsmann, I mean, obviously he's going to try and win the games, but let him dabble into what he sees to be the right players for his system. Does it look like he's abandoned the 4-4-2 that, you know, that seems to be so common with the U.S. national team? It looks more like they've called it a 4-3-3, maybe a 4-5-1, maybe a 4-1-3-1.
Yeah, he might have, but, you know, again, he just might be playing around to see what works and what doesn't work. You know, one thing I remember about Klinsmann, and I happened to be in Germany for this in 2006 when the U.S. had played Poland and beat them 1-0 in an international friendly there. And Germany had lost to Italy in Italy, if I'm not mistaken, that was the venue, 4-1 that night. And I was at the airport the next day, and the headlines said disaster, you know, and the headlines in the German paper said disaster. And yes, for someone who doesn't know German, I could definitely tell what the word disaster means. And people were panicking because here it is March, it's only 3 months before the World Cup, and look, Italy hands Germany its collective head in a horrible performance. Klinsmann said, you know, hey, don't panic. And we all know what happened. Well, Italy did go to the championship game. They did eliminate
the French.
The French in the game. And Germany finished in third place. Again, I think it's just way too early to be concerned. And I just think you got to give them some leeway the rest of this year. I think next year, if things don't start looking better, yes, it's time to start biting the nails, scratching the heads, and trying to figure out what the heck is happening. But I think right now there should be, some sort of a honeymoon period. Maybe it's over with but when you don't when you can't get more than a draw. But, again, these games ultimately don't mean anything. I'm trying not to panic. I'm not panicking is what I mean, I should say.
Yeah. No, I completely agree with you. I don't think it's time to panic. I think right now you've got, okay, now that this game against Belgium is over, you have about 4 more friendlies, two in October, 2 in November before 2012 comes around. Obviously, there'll be probably another 2, 3, 4 friendlies being scheduled by U.S. Soccer before June 8th comes around, which I believe that will be the beginning of CONCACAF World Cup qualifying for the U.S. What have you seen so far? I guess these the first two games of Klinsmann's start. Who have you seen that's impressed you right now?
Oh, boy. Tim Howard.
Besides Timmy.
Yeah, I'm trying to.
Let me throw some names at you. How do you feel about Breck Shea?
Breck Shea is, as long as he doesn't log too many minutes, I mean, I feel like he's playing in every game possible out there. I think that's someone that Klinsmann should go out and work with. The kid is 21, 22, has found his groove. He's big, he's mobile, and he could score. other teams have players like that. It's about time the U.S. has someone like that. And I think he just needs experience at the level. And I think he should just, I think you should, Klinsmann should just play him. Someone like him, you know, and whether it's Agudelo, and Agudelo, and I know what drives me crazy about the media in this country is, you know, we find a young player and we make him the flavor of the week, and we go gaga over him and saying that he's going to be the next great scoring star of the U.S. national team, and he doesn't live up to the hype that the media made for him. And Agudelo needs to play more with his club team. And I know this is not about the Red Bulls and whatnot, and you and I could have a very long discussion privately or publicly on the radio or the internet about Agudelo. But you know, I think with these young kids, beyond playing for their national team, they also have to play for their club team. Brett Shea is getting that opportunity, and we're seeing him come into his own with Dallas, which is he has very good players around him and whatnot. And I think Agudelo, unfortunately, has not gotten as much playing time with the Red Bulls to just go through different situations, pressure situations, and whatnot, because there's nothing like playing alongside Thierry Henry to learn the game.
Mm-hmm. What's your take about Jose Francisco Torres getting basically a second opportunity where, in my opinion, you know, you don't want to say anything negative about Bob Bradley, but let's be honest, Bob Bradley didn't really show too much faith in him for some strange reason, even though he brought him over.
Yeah, definitely. You know, maybe Bob just didn't think he was fitting into the system at the time or playing well. And, you know, different players, it's funny, some depending on how a coach handles a player, and it could be talking to him, using the right psychology, how he uses them, either in practice, scrimmages, in games themselves, it can mean a lot to a player. And what I am getting at is some players play well for certain coaches and some don't. I mean, there are some that Landon Donovan, for example, you know, you could put anyone out there, and he'll play well as long as I shouldn't say anyone, but he'll play well as long as the system is reasonable. But you know, there are particularly maybe younger players or less experienced players or even less talented players. They might need the right coach to open up the door for them to get that confidence, whether it's at the club level or in the international level. And Torres, I'd like to see him get that opportunity again. And again, you know, Klinsmann, I think it's an open book with him. It's a new regime, and I think he's willing to give everyone who might not have gotten an opportunity under Bob Bradley another chance under him, which is the way it should be, no matter who a new coach is. So Torres is, you know, unless he sinks up the joint, I expect, you know, I'd like to see him play a few more times, too. You know, again, I did not see today's game, but I've been disappointed in someone who played for the Mexican team, Edgar Castillo. He struggled at left back, and we all know what when Bocanegra is not at left fullback, the team definitely struggles, and let's face it, if I'm not mistaken, Carlos will be 35 at the next World Cup. That doesn't mean he will be too old, but there aren't many 35-year-old outside flank defenders rolling around, you know, running around the field at the World Cup level. Usually they're a central defender, which Bocanegra has acquitted himself well at, but so there's some places the U.S. needs to solidify itself, and definitely on the flank defending positions. And the number one priority would be the left side. I think the right side, we've got some interesting candidates.
Very, very true. I guess my last pick from this roster would be probably Robbie Rogers, who does get a lot of time for Columbus in MLS. Is it just me, or do you feel maybe he come? Some feel he shouldn't be on this team, but I feel he would be a lot better coming off the bench.
Probably right now is an understudy somewhere in the midfield. I think, you know, in a perfect world, you know, you're going to have, well, there are so many different combinations you could have, but if Stuart Holden is healthy and at 100% fitness, I mean, he's a viable option at midfield. You know, so is, you want to have someone like a Michael Bradley in the center of the field, and then you've got Clint Dempsey and Landon Donovan, who could play midfield or forward as well, too. And then you've got Josie Altidore. And what I'm saying is, right now I think Rogers might be better off as a sub, but that's how a lot of players start. I mean, that's how Stuart Holden started, you know, with the national team, coming off the bench until he became a force, you know, in MLS, and then eventually went over to Scotland. And I'm proud of him because I had him on my fantasy team 2 years ago before anyone really thought he was going to do anything. But that's just a personal thing. You know, the thing with the national team or even a club team, you know, you need depth at every position because there are, you know, players out of form at the international level, players who are injured, players who are suspended, players who are tired. I'm probably forgetting a few other things too. Maybe players who maybe can't go to all the games because of the ridiculous traveling between the United States and Europe, whatever. So you just need good depth at every position. And I think Rogers, you know, could give the U.S. some good depth in the midfield.
Absolutely. Plus, it was pretty good to see Clint Dempsey with the U.S. team this afternoon getting an opportunity. Michael, thank you very much for coming on the show. I'll see you, if not at training at Montclair State Thursday, I'll see you at Red Bull Arena on Saturday.
Hey, listen, it's my pleasure. I appreciate it. And keep dry, everyone.
At least for those of us here in the tri-state area, thanks. Get back to your yacht and run Konkama, please.
Thanks.
Yeah, sure. Michael Lewis, Big Apple Soccer, as well as tropigoal.com. Anything with CONCACAF, once again, tropigoal.com is your place to go to. Talking about the national team, you guys, you got to calm down. You have to stay calm. You have to relax. I understand one goal in three American matches is not that great. I understand that it's not pleasant at the moment, but can we just calm down? Can we, please? I mean, it's not like Klinsmann took over in January. It's not like Klinsmann took over February or March, okay? He took over in August. He had a short couple of days before the friendly against Mexico in Philadelphia. You know, he still has to get players in to see what they can do, how they can do, what makes them tick. He has now three matches down, four to go in 2012. You wanted him. You screamed for him. You begged, you pleaded, you said, we want Klinsmann right now. That's not me screaming it. That's you guys screaming it. You wanted him right here, right now. Now all of a sudden, you're acting like he's screwing everything up already. You're acting like it's already over. It's been three games, guys. Come on. Look, I would have loved to see them get that goal. I thought that was a legitimate goal. I didn't think it was offsides. I did not see a handball. I did not see a foul. But the goal for the U.S. that got called off was called offsides. Nowhere did I see offsides. Any of the players that probably were ahead of the play did not get to the ball. Isn't it supposed to be the players who touched the ball ahead of the defenders when it was delivered? Aren't they the ones supposed to be offsides? Isn't this passive offsides also allowed as well? I mean, shouldn't the flag have come up if the ball touched one white shirt that was ahead of an orangish look, orangey brownish looking shirt? You know, I'm just saying, yes, we got hosed on a call. The USA got hosed on a call that was not offsides. But just because they lost these last two games only by a single goal, you know what that says to me? That says to me that something is working here. That tells me something has been working well. Is there a problem not putting the ball in the back of the net right now? Yes. Right now, there is that slight problem. You know what? You want to know what else is there's a problem? There's a problem with communication. There's a problem with certain players not being clear on the field. You don't see the little things going wrong. You just see a bigger picture. Is there a problem with flank play? Right now, yes. Is there a problem not putting in the ball in the back of the net? Yes. Defensively, I think they've been okay. And when they've been knocked down, they've gotten right back up and they've attacked with the ball. This is something you guys have to understand, and this is something you guys need to understand. You can't keep going off like chickens with their heads cut off. That's why, as Michael Lewis said, these games, if you want to worry, go ahead and worry. But it's not a time to panic. There is no time to panic right now. Calm down. Take it easy. Don't worry. These things are fixable. We already know who's going to be on this national team. We've already seen what Breck Shea can do. I think Robbie Rogers would be more of an asset coming off the bench than starting. While, in my opinion, this new formation is not bad on the defensive end of the ball, I think it's time for Klinsmann to really revert back to the 4-4-2. Because at the moment, whether it's Jozy Altidore or Juan Agudelo, the solo striker is struggling at the moment. Altidore needs a partner. Agudelo needs a partner. And at the same time, let's see what happens when you have Landon Donovan, Michael Bradley, Clint Dempsey, Stuart Holden, all on the same field, along with Breck Shea, Jozy Altidore, and Jose Francisco Torres in the midfield. Defensively, we'll see who will do well as the fullbacks. But at this moment right now, you've got nothing to panic about. You're concerned? You're concerned. Don't panic. Because the real time to panic starts June 8th, 2012, depending on who they're going to face in their group besides Jamaica. That's all. Nothing more, nothing less. You just got to calm down, see what's going to happen, and not worry so much. Because if you're going to panic, guess what? It's all over. If you're going to panic, you know, you just, it just makes no sense to do anything. Because then you're already gone, you don't know what to do, and you just feel like, I don't know. I thought he was supposed to go that way, and you don't want to get to that level, or else it's, forget it. You're already in Toontown, my friend. You're already in Toontown, so it makes no sense to go that way. You'll be pulling off a Bugs Bunny routine, and then next thing you know, it's like you finally get back to down to earth, and they've already won 3 or 4 games in a row. But anyway, from what I saw, or what I didn't see, once again, I just want to bring back the situation. ESPN says on their main channel, the game is on their main channel at 2:30. You set your DVR if you're not able to come back home to watch. I had some things to take care of, and I had the DVR set up, and I was ready to go. Now, all of a sudden, you turn on channel 36, and it's like, why is NASCAR on channel 36? And then you push the information button for the TV guide or the information button of the channel, and it says ESPN U.S. Soccer from 2:30 to 5 o'clock in the afternoon. But it's not there. And then you're thinking to yourself, did they move it to the ESPN News channel, the ESPN Classic channel? But instead of going there, you say to yourself, don't tell me to put on ESPN2. And then that's what I did. Went to ESPN2, there it was. Because ESPN2 was supposed to be a full day of tennis matches from the U.S. Open in Queens, Flushing Meadow Park, Queens. And that got wiped out. But why does NASCAR have to be on the main channel and you can't put NASCAR on ESPN2? You can't keep saying the same old thing, ESPN hates soccer. No, they don't. ESPN likes English soccer. That's what you got to say. When it's the national team for the USA, the only time it really matters to be on the main channel, if they wish, is when it's World Cup qualifying or the World Cup itself. All I can say is this. I wish for ESPN to at least inform us maybe a couple hours before, saying we're going to be moving the game to ESPN2, so NASCAR will be on ESPN, because there will be no U.S. Open tennis because of the heavy rainstorms that's here in the New York City tri-state area. All I can say is this. Throw us a bone. Give us a hand, and everything will be okay. So basically, catching some of the highlights of the first half, which obviously was nil-nil, how could there be, because there's no goals. Wrong. Tim Howard. It looked very good. They all said that the first 20, 25 minutes of the USA looked all right. They looked very good, very sharp, and all of a sudden things just went to hell. These things are correctable. Give Klinsmann more than just 3 games, people. Give him more than just 3 games. Because if you're ready to crucify him right now, then what was the point of even keeping him? Seriously, what was the point of even what was the point for U.S. Soccer to even bother to make the switch from Bob Bradley to Jurgen Klinsmann? I mean, if you're going to be like this, I'd rather have Bob Bradley back, to be honest with you, if you're going to act like this. And I'm not talking about people at U.S. Soccer. I'm talking about you guys, the fans, the supporters. If you guys are going to be start crying foul and bloody murder because all of a sudden Jurgen Klinsmann is not what you expected, you know what? It's only been 3 games. It's only been probably a month and a half. Not even a month and a half, more like a month and a week. If you guys are going to be screaming and crying foul already that you are not happy with what you're seeing already, these changes cannot come at a snap of the fingers. It just doesn't work like that. Obviously, you had some friendlies, you had a Gold Cup, and then when you're ready to go to face Mexico in a friendly, which you were originally thinking it's Bob Bradley, Bob is gone, Jurgen's here, let's go, this is what we've been waiting for, and then all of a sudden, something you see you don't like, you're already wanting to change it again. Already, you're saying, this is not what we expected. This is not what we wanted. Jurgen Klinsmann, he was supposed to be the one. No. No, what are you doing? No, Jurgen, no, please. Spare us. Like, we want someone else. Get rid of him. He's horrible. He's terrible. He doesn't know what he's doing. And that's what I'm talking about with you ready to hit the panic button, even though it's only three games. You've hit the panic button when it's only been three freaking games. What are we going to do with you guys? Seriously, what are we going to do with you guys? I don't know. He's just not satisfied. You think Rome was built in a day? Well, apparently, in your minds, yes. It took one single day for the Romans to dig a hole, go to the Acme store, get an instant Colosseum, put it into the ground, bury it, pour the water, and boom! An instant Colosseum, an instant city. Well, you know, guys, if you're not patient enough to let Klinsmann do what he's got to do, then you know what? It's all our faults. It's all our fault because you didn't give Klinsmann the proper time. And I know what you're saying. Why are you blaming it on us? We didn't do anything. We want to see our country win a game against these people, against these opponents. We should be dominating. And what happened? All of a sudden, the Fire Klinsmann Brigade comes out now. You rip off the posters of Bob Bradley, you rip out Bob Bradley's name, and then you hang up Jurgen Klinsmann after the word fire. You hang up a big poster of Klinsmann, and it says diagonally below his chin, fire Klinsmann. Well, it's your fault. You forced him to do something. I understand if these results might not be in your favor or whatever, but still, you're the ones that are already calling his name out. Fire Klinsmann. Yes, you just started it. And, of course, some of you have said, well, they don't have the swagger. Who coaches swagger? Please. Who coaches swagger? It's not about missing confidence. Okay? It's miscommunication right now. They're just miscommunicating. Sometimes the passes are too strong, and sometimes the passes are too soft. But we will get there. They will get there. You just have to be calm, and you just have to be taking it easy. That's all. Take it easy. I want to thank my guest, Michael Lewis of Big Apple Soccer, and, of course, TrophyGoal.com. Thank you for coming in. Before the show ends, let's get a quick update right now. It's in first half stoppage time, but Canada's up 1-0 on Puerto Rico. Ian Hume in the 41st minute puts Canada ahead. Curaçao and Haiti are scoreless. Cayman Islands, El Salvador scoreless. Guyana, Bermuda scoreless. But at the moment, Canada is ahead. My name is Daniel Feuerstein. Thanks for listening. And please, as always, enjoy your football. Thank you and have a good night.